Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator for the Limark Technical Met. It's been going strong for over 43 years. Every Sunday night at around 8 p.m., we gather in front of our radios and inform each other, teach each other, learn from each other, hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me tonight, this Sunday night at 8 p.m., when we'll attempt it once again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions normally asked during the TechNet, but if you're not available, you can email them to me. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them to stimulate conversation. Or if some technical technology has become big in the news and you have an expertise and you'd like to share it with all of us, you can contact me and we'll set aside some time for you to discuss that technology. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at a space or NASA-related story. Of course, you can directly email him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. And as always, I cut and paste interesting articles through the week, and I put it up on a link page. And you can look at it anytime you want. We keep it open 24/7. You type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's quiet. Last week it was very busy. You can get to it by typing into your web browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and we leave it live the rest of the week, so you can listen into the Glen Oaks repeater if you don't have a radio. You just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And as always, I like to remind people, Mike, KC2NJI, has an archive site called amateurradio.tv. He has archived the as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many past episodes of the TechNet. Many of the people that you'll hear there have either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys. So their wisdom persists on Mike's website. So avail yourself of it. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back. Okay. We have a basic vanilla episode of the Technical Met. I have a couple of opening statements to make, after which I will open it up for questions, topics, and comments. I'll ask people to give me your call sign, your first name, and what kind of material you got planning to give us, and we'll put it on the list, and we adjust the list depending upon consideration of people who have less time than others, but we do appreciate it when people show up at the beginning of the Technical Net and put their name on the list. Sometimes people show up late and then they get annoyed with the fact that other people have put their name down ahead of them. So that's the plan until about 10:15. Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on things and wish everyone well for the coming week. As long as the laws of physics continue, the repeater stays nice and healthy, my shack stays nice and healthy, that's what we got planned. So let me drop for a second, and I'll give you a very short opening statement. A lot of times I talk about artificial intelligence during this early segment. Not really much has been going on the last few days. They made all their big announcements around Christmas time, and then I guess they rested up. Of course, this past week was somewhat eventful. It was the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where a lot of televisions, a lot of very, very, very big televisions, I don't have a room that fits some of those televisions, and transparent televisions and all kinds of things were shown. A lot of strange stuff, a lot of weird stuff. They're trying to sell artificial intelligence. They're trying to sell robots. So it was sort of interesting, if a little bit on the quirky side. So I hope, I'm sure not too many people listening tonight went to Las Vegas to attend, but you probably saw some YouTubes filter through with interesting gadgets. Of course, someone had to come up with a truck that carried a copter in it, so you could drive your electric vehicle someplace and unload a quadcopter and ride it around if you have $500,000 to kill. So, yeah, it was a normal CES, what can I tell you? Anyway, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Med. We're open for business. So if anyone has any questions, topics, or comments to make tonight and would like to go on the list, please hit that push to talk and do so.
W2PZ, ham radio related.
Rich recognized. I think there was someone doubling with you, Rich. So the person who wasn't Rich, try again.
Enter GN, ham radio related.
Okay, Rich and Wes recognized. Anyone else would like to put their name on the list, please?
KG2RY, just listening.
Okay, David. Anyone else want to put their name on the list early? Of course, we'll accept admissions later on as the time allows. But best to get your name on the list early. Okay, hopefully later on people will come by with questions or comments or topics for discussion. So first on our list for tonight is Rich, W2BZ. What's your question tonight, Rich?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody who's listening. Anybody who's listening? I have a shortened NFET wire, and I made the coil myself. And I was wondering, I know, you know, the reason why you put a coil on an antenna like that is to lengthen it. And I understand how physically it's lengthened, because if I unwound the coil, it would probably add 10 feet to the antenna. But I really don't know electrically how it's lengthening the antenna. How does an antenna lengthen, or how can you lengthen an antenna with a coil? What's going on electromagnetically, Paul? I mean, Roy, go ahead.
Okay. Well, as we've mentioned in the past, that another way of describing an electronically resonant radiating antenna is that it has no residual inductance or capacitance. It has only pure resistance. When your antenna is non-resonant, that's when the inductance and the capacitance become a factor. If your antenna is shorter than the resonant frequency, and you run it through a VNA, you will find that it has a residual capacitive reactance and additional impedance, which is reactive. If your antenna is too long for the frequency and you run a VNA on it, you will see that it has an inductive reactance and an inductive impedance, which isn't good for it either. So the way to electronically resonate a mechanical antenna is to get the optimum distance so that it has no residual inductive or capacitive reactance. The way to fix a broken non-resonant electronic, mechanical antenna is to neutralize the reactants. Because a shortened antenna has a capacitive reactance, the way to neutralize a capacitive reactance is by introducing an inductive reactance, a coil. Now, it's true that you can take a coil and you can stretch it out and it will be mechanically longer than when you didn't have the coil. But if you measure it, you could get it to resonance with a coil and then straighten the coil and it won't be resonant anymore because it's not just the length of the wire, but the geometry of the wire that's increasing the inductance. A length of wire is going to have a higher inductance if you coil it than if you leave it straight. So I hope that helps. If not, please tell me and I'll clarify.
So you're increasing the inductance, which serves to increase the length of the antenna. So by increasing the inductance, you increase the length of an antenna?
You're not changing the length, you're resonating it.
Yes, that's the point. This is not a mechanical fix. A mechanical fix would be increasing the amount of wire. Something like a stepper IR uses that principle, where it has a stepper motor that feeds more of the radiating line to a length that's physically resonant. This is electronically resonating it by changing the inductance or the capacitance. In the case of a shortened antenna, you fix the capacitive reactance, you neutralize it by introducing an inductor. Now, again, you can stretch the inductor and it's a length of wire, but it's not the length of wire that's ultimately doing it. It's the inductance of the length of wire. And if you coil it, the same given length of wire will have more inductance than a just straight piece of wire.
But doesn't the the extra wire? Doesn't that length come into effect also?
Not at all.
Yes, as he said, not at all. It's the inductance. You could very easily bunch together the coils so their geometry is negligible. As long as it's a bunch of coiled pieces of wire producing an inductance, that's the magic. It's not the length of the wire, it's the inductance that the coiled wire adds to the circuit.
Okay, so it's purely an electromagnetic phenomenon, correct?
Well, I would call it electrical, or you could say electronic, as opposed to mechanical. Mechanical would be just splicing some extra wire there. So that would be mechanical. This is electronic or electrical, depending upon whether your mother was an English teacher.
Okay. So it's just a matter of what the rig sees, right? What's coming into the rig, what that sees, rather than anything to do with physical length. What is the rig seeing when you add that coil?
The rig is seeing that the antenna feed point is hopefully a non-reactive load. It doesn't have inductive reactants. It doesn't have capacitive reactants. It is a purely resistive load. That's what the antenna needs to be in order to be resonant.
Okay, so if I added two more identical coils, would that lengthen it further?
again, I would not describe it as, quote, lengthening, because that's a mechanical aspect. Electrically, you are effectively making the antenna act as though it is a longer mechanical length. So if it's resonant at the present and you add another inductor, it'll now be it'll now look like it's too long for what you're trying to resonate it, and you would have to put, say, if you wanted, a capacitor across it to neutralize the additional inductive reactants that you just gave it. So if you were deciding that you wanted it to be resonant for a longer wavelength, the way to do that would be to add an additional inductor. Adding additional inductors effectively make it seem as though it's mechanically longer. Adding capacitors make it seem as though it's now mechanically shorter, where resonance occurs.
Would the coil have to be the exact dimensions of the first coil, or can you wind, you know, shorter amount of turns on a second coil?
You can make them any turns that you want. Effectively, the length of wire, the radius, the diameter, all and the core, air core or some other core, will determine what the inductance of that particular inductor is, and the inductance will then affect the change in resonant frequency accordingly. So you could have a little teeny a bunch of wound wire with a high inductance that will lengthen it a great deal. You could have a big single coil that has a little inductance that just lengthens it a little bit. So it's the end inductance that determines the effective change of the resonant frequency.
And how do you measure, I know how to measure the inductance of the coil, but how do you measure the inductance of an antenna, let's say a long wire?
Okay, David, by the way, you recognize, I'll get to you in a moment, that's what your VNA is for. You remember the impedance? Well, that tells you at a given frequency what your you know, what's going on. Is it positive? Is it negative? That's what that impedance is telling you. Hopefully, you just want the 50 ohms of resistance at resonance. But if you make the antenna too short, in addition to your resistance, you'll see that there's a notation for J. That's the reactance, and that's what it's telling you when it tells you that there's a J value, that you have some residual reactance in addition to the pure resistance.
You know, in the different designs that I looked up, they, just about all of them except one, added a single coil to the wire. One of the designs added two coils, but for instance, if I wanted to be resonant at 80 meters, couldn't I add three more coils or something like that in the ballpark until I got it resonant on, let's say, the CW portion of 80?
Okay, well, again, the problem is discussing simple concepts like the number of coils is kind of missing the underlying concept. You can have the same number of coils in two inductors, and because of the other geometries, they have a different inductance. So it sort of depends, again, on the inductance. It depends what you're looking to get and what's the point of the exercise. It is the reason that NFEDs often have a coil, sometimes they have capacitors, because they're kind of designed to work at harmonic levels of the amateur radio band, and if they don't have either a capacitor or inductor, the harmonics are a little bit off on the hand bands as you go higher and higher. So you start getting into trouble using that NFED for higher frequencies. And so that's why most designs have an inductor, so that they interact with the harmonics and they bring them down a little bit so that they're better, they're closer to resonance. Now, if your NFED is too short electronically and you just want that inductor to lengthen it electrically so it's resonant, then it depends upon the residual capacitive reactants that you're neutralizing. So it's the Henrys, micro Henrys, that count, not the number of loops per se, although loops are one of the factor in the geometry that determine the inductance of an inductor.
That I know. I have a meter that measures inductance, so I could wind coils very specifically to exactly the amount of inductance I want, microhenries that I want out of the coil. But what do you give up? Let's get back to the one coil. Forget about adding more. It's not perfect, you know. If it was, then everybody would have much shorter antennas, long wires anyway. So what are you giving up by putting even a single coil into the antenna?
Okay, well, let's go into, I think, the perfect example of what can go wrong with the example of the hamstick. Everyone has seen a hamstick. Many people have owned a hamstick. It is a compromised mobile whip that is inductively loaded at the base so that the antenna doesn't snap off. And if everyone could just kind of have a very small whip antenna and then a massive inductor at the base in order to electrically resonate an antenna, why would anyone bother with anything else? Well, like all things in physics, you have to pay a price for everything. When you shorten an antenna and then electrically resonate it with a large inductor, you pay the price a bunch of different ways. You increase the Q of the resonant antenna. So instead of being somewhat broader based where you don't have to do any tuning, some of these hamsticks are very resonant at very narrow bandwidths. When you get off of them, all of a sudden your VISWA goes up. Another point, unfortunately, is something called radiation resistance. The resistance that when I talk of a resonant antenna, there's two aspects. There's radiation resistance, which is, it's not really just burning energy. It's radiating the energy as RF, but it acts as a resistor, but it's a radiative resistor. And there's also a heat-inducing waste resistance in any electric circuit that produces just waste heat and no RF. So as you shorten the antenna and then electrically lengthen it with an inductance, you effectively decrease the radiation resistance. And what that does is the resistance in the circuit itself becomes greater than the radiation resistance. More energy is used to heat up the elements into waste heat than to transfer them into electromagnetic waves and propagate them. So it's a less efficient antenna, and it's a much more narrow resonancy. And that's why everyone doesn't just stick a ham stick up their roofs.
I thought you were going to say something else when you said stick a ham stick up there. All right, so would it be correct to say then that the coil is eating up too much power, or eating up a certain amount of power that's not being radiated?
Well, yeah, but you know, it's a little bit more subtle. When you're using an inductant, it's not a perfect conductor. So that coil of wire that you have, which has to get bigger and bigger, the more it has to take over the job of the shrinking whip, has internal resistances, and it's also a high current point at the base. It would be easier to deal with if you could put it higher up, but then the weight would probably break the damn thing. So at the base, you have the highest current load, but you also have a significant amount of electrical resistance because it's not a perfect superconductor, so you have dissipated resistance and heat. So, yeah, the coil is warming up and taking a lot of your energy out of your transmitter instead of letting it radiate into radio waves, which is the point of the whole thing.
Would a burned watt meter show you what's going on with that power that's being burnt up?
No, because a burned watt meter can only do two things. It can tell you the amount of power you're sending to the antenna and how much is getting reflected back. It cannot, unfortunately, tell you the efficiency of your antenna. It would be great if we had some simple tool that could tell us the efficiency of our antennas, because a lot of people settle for an antenna that's inherently highly inefficient. And other than kind of just putting a thermal probe around it and seeing how much heat gets dissipated in parts of some antennas, it's not an easy job to figure out the efficiency of an antenna.
Does a grid dip meter do it?
No, not at all. A grid dip meter is a classic device which is seldom used these days, purely to figure out the resonant frequency of whatever you're testing. So it'll tell you if your antenna or a tuned circuit is resonant. Again, it will not tell you the efficiency of the energy transfer, how much of it is being turned into radio waves versus heat.
So that brings up another question. Why can't you measure efficiency?
Okay. How would you measure efficiency? The optimum way is to find a friend who has the budget of the Department of Defense and get them to lend you their isotropic chamber. There are these big radio wave capturing chambers where you can put an antenna up there and start to measure the local fields, and then, you know, take a lot of measurements and integrate them and come up with a rough approximation of how much radio energy is being transmitted off of a given radiating antenna. But since we don't have that kind of budget, we can't do that. So it's very difficult to figure out how much total radio energy is being emitted from your antenna. You can sweep little areas for local radio field intensities, but how do you integrate them all over, you know, 360 degrees and such?
I guess one way to do it is you get into a QSO, you build two antennas, one with a coil, one without a coil, resonant on the same frequency, and ask somebody what the difference is in your signal report, switching back from one to the other.
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, what we as hams do is accept anecdotal reports. Problem is, a lot of people are confused and or lie. I'm sure you've regularly heard stories of people saying that you're getting reports of 5-9 and then being asked to repeat what you said repeatedly because they couldn't understand anything you were talking about with a 5-9 signal. So So you got to depend on the other guy. You got to depend. It's a complicated bunch of reasons for why things propagate and other things don't. So it'll give you a vague idea if you're working with a very inefficient antenna. But the nuances and such are unfortunately not easy to grasp. I mean, again, this is why the Department of Defense will spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on anechoic chambers and such to test antenna designs and not just kind of transmit and ask their friend across town how the two signals differed.
But when you're looking to buy an antenna, there's no way to compare efficiencies, right?
No, unfortunately not. It's all anecdotal, and, you know, we've talked about this many, many times on the technical net. Very often you will look at EHAM and such, and just about every antenna ever made has at least a couple of guys who tell you that it's the greatest thing they ever saw. And some of these antennas are actually glorified dummy loads. They basically just have a resistive load in the middle, and most of the RF that escapes is out the common mode on the coax cable. So that's not a good design, particularly for antennas. And yet, you go to EHAM, and they swear by them. I mean, some of them times they curse them. But very often, you will find people who are pro every design ever done on a commercial antenna design.
Well, I guess that's it, Roy. I sort of have a little bit of a grip on it now, a little better understanding, but I'm still a little hazy on the ratios of, you know, inductance and capacitance, still and resistance, a little hazy on how they all work together, but it'll do for now. Thanks, Roy. W2BZ.
Okay, thank you, JJE. Could I give a little comment?
Certainly.
Okay, this is K2GJE. Your rig is looking for a resonant circuit. And starting out right away with an antenna that is of the wrong length, you have to correct it. You have to resonate it. Antenna tuners also do this. But based upon the length, if it's too short, you can add some coil at the base. You could also add a coil in the middle. If it's too long, you can add some capacitance. How much? That's the problem. Your VNA can tell you this, or even SWR meter can tell you this. Most of the rigs today have built-in SWR indication, and by changing frequency, you can see where your SWR is the best. By adding coil, you can see what you're doing to the SWR. That will tell you how much coil to add. A VNA will tell you, but if you don't have a VNA, I like SWR meters. That's all we had years ago. VNAs were too expensive, and we adjusted capacitance or inductance to get that SWR down. How'd we get it down? Well, to a certain extent, it was trial and error. If we had an antenna that was too short, and most of us have this problem in this area, we don't have acres of land. So we put out short horizontal antennas or even short vertical antennas, and we load them with coils on the bottom or in the middle, and we adjust it for the lowest SWR. And that's where we're looking at an antenna that's a resonant circuit. How much coil? A little bit is going to be trial and error. Over.
Okay, thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate it. I mean, the bottom line to take away tonight is that an antenna is intrinsically a tuned circuit. It may just look like a long length of wire, but electrically, it's a tuned circuit at the frequency that you want to use it. If it's resonant, all the capacitive reactants and inductive reactants cancel each other out, and you're left with a pure resistive load. Hopefully radiation-resistant load. And all the rest is just fiddling with this tuned circuit that you're trying to get to send radio waves across the world.
Yeah, well, as I say, I have a bit of a grip on it, a bit of an understanding, not complete. But I will, I'll Google a whole bunch this week and see if I can get a better understanding. Maybe using Gemini or ChatGPT in a question and answer form, you know, will get me a little closer. Anyway, Roy, thanks a lot. I'll be listening. W2BC.
Okay, very good. Just keep in mind that ChatGPT does lie. And the other one, Gemini, I don't know, I quite call it lying, but they go kind of soft and squishy with the facts. And if you kind of grab them and shove their nose down into it, they'll admit that they simplified or made assumptions that when you said one thing, you actually meant another thing. So they're not the Oracle of Delphi. So keep that in mind at all times. Maybe someday they will be, but right now they're fallible, and they're trying to make everyone happy, which is usually not the thing you want from a source of wisdom.
Yeah, well, during the TechNet tonight, I'll actually give it a try. I use Gemini. They're both basically the same. So I'll see what it comes up with, and if it generates another question, I'll come back to it tonight. All right, Roy, thank you.
Okay. I tend to prefer Gemini over ChatGPT. ChatGPT, I could talk into 1 plus 1 equals 3. Gemini, I had a very interesting theological discussion with Gemini, and he basically tried to not be, not upset anyone with what he said. So I wish you luck with that, Rich. David, did you want to say something?
Yeah, there were two things I wanted to say regarding, this conversation. One is, if you look at the Space Saver, Alpha Delta, DX, Echo Echo, there is one wire that has a coil on it for 20 meters and 40 meters. So supposedly it should be resonant on some frequency, 20 meters and 40 meters. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, I had a friend in Hamburg, and he had a wire inside of his apartment, and it sent a CW on 20 meters, 40 meters, and then he added a coil and a wire for 80 meters. And so that's what this conversation brought to my mind. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, I have the Alpha Delta, I had the Alpha Delta Big Brother, which was 10 to 80, and its last dipole was 40 with a loading coil between it, and the idea, I think, was that at lower frequencies, the change in the inductance of the coil would let it be resonant at 80, and at higher frequencies, it would kind of act as a kind of pseudo trap, and kind of shorten the effect of radiating length of it. So your fan dipoles, especially the Alpha Delta, have had that feature for many, many years. The 80 meter was very, very high Q, very, very narrow. I needed to use my my Palstar antenna tuner regularly to get anything to show resonance on 80 meters for that particular Alpha Delta fan dipole.
USL. Yeah, well, my antenna tuner, you know, I can see the SWR, or basically what the SWR is, and also the power output, and Space Saver Dipole, 10 meters through 40 meters, including 12 and 17 with the tuner. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it works pretty good. It works pretty good, you know. And now I leave it to the next person who's on the list. I wait until it's my turn.
Okay, David.
WTDC?
Yeah, Rich?
This is very interesting. It says when a coil is added to an antenna, it introduces inductance. This inductance causes the radio waves to travel more slowly along the antenna, and the result is the slower travel of radio waves due to the coil makes the antenna appear longer to the radio waves, even though its physical size remains the same. This effectively increases the antenna's resonant frequency, allowing it to operate on a longer wavelength. So they're talking about the speed of travel of the wave, Roy.
Yeah, John, you know, John KD2BD, great guy, and unfortunately he's not able to get into the repeater, but he does come to the chat room. So there was a cry from John in the chat room. He said, no, slower through the coil, not along the antenna, which is a good point. So I thank you, John.
This says the inductance causes the radio waves to travel more slowly along the antenna, not just the coil. That's what Gemini says anyway.
Well, Gemini has problems with a lot of things. Say again?
More nonsense.
Yes, unfortunately. I cautioned you, Rich, but you don't want to listen to my caution. Unfortunately, AI is given to simplifications and assumptions. And so, unfortunately, if you want a rough approximation, which means the wrong answer, artificial intelligence is the place to go. So, you know, we got John on the... on the chat room, we got Ed on the radio. I'm sure if there's some electrical engineers out there, they would like to kind of yell and scream and jump up and down. But unfortunately, Gemini has let you down, Rich. I'm sorry.
Let me just read you the concluding paragraph. In simpler terms, imagine a car driving on a straight road versus driving on a winding, hilly road. The winding road is longer in distance, but the car travels slower on it. Similarly, the coil makes the radio waves take a longer route, in quotation marks, along the antenna, effectively lengthening it.
Yeah, but the analogy breaks the whole point. This occurs at the level of the inductor, not at the global level of the entire antenna system. So these effects are local. Even the analogy describes it as local. If you go up and down a bunch of hills and then you go on a straight road, the length of the straight road doesn't increase. It's the hills that make it seem that it increased.
makes it seem like the antenna is longer.
But it's the effect of the inductor. It's not a global effect. The way that you read that paragraph was that the inductor slows it down and the rest of the antenna keeps on being slow, as opposed to, no, it's just a local effect to the coil. It's not a global effect to the entire antenna system.
But if the coil is attached to the antenna, doesn't it affect the antenna?
No, it's a phenomena of the coil, only the coil. It has no particular additional effect on the rest of the antenna system. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
Slow waves. No such thing. I mean, we write about it, we talk about it, it doesn't exist. If you take the piece of wire and coil it, and you have it in the x-axis or y-axis, it looks like locally, that's what you said, locally, the wave is slow. No, the wave moves the same way, with the same speed. It is just that vertically in that axis, let's say, or horizontally, whatever the axis is, the wave takes more time to go. But if you had had a strong wire, it would be exactly the same time for the wave to travel. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, again, the problem with artificial intelligence is it's sort of designed to make people who aren't professionals or semi-professionals or know much technical, to give them a good warm feeling that they understand something. They're not going to start to tell you about the lead and lag time of capacitance and inductance, how the current phase in relation to the voltage phase alters. They're going to use analogies that are simple to understand and full of errors. And this is an example of that. So unfortunately, although Gemini told you this, you shouldn't listen to strangers, Rich.
All right, Daddy. I won't. No, I don't. I don't take it as gospel. I just, it's a little weird why Gemini would conclude that the whole topic has to do with how fast waves are traveling. That's what they're basing their whole answer on, how fast, how alternating, by introducing a coil, you in effect slow down the waves traveling across the antenna. If that's totally wrong, then the hell with AI.
Which I've kind of been saying for a while now. I mean, it's a good parlor trick, but it's fraught with problems. Here we see a problem right now. The problem, among many other things, again, its bottom line is not to inform you or educate you or to consider things, because it's not conscious. It's there to make you happy. So it finds a analogy that is so fundamentally simple that almost anyone can understand the analogy. The problem that the analogy is wrong is incidental as far as its programming is concerned. You walk away with a warm feeling in your heart and a nice thing to say about Gemini. The electrical engineers out here are probably having heart attacks, but you know that's the price that they pay for knowing how things work. So it's the flaw in artificial intelligence that it doesn't necessarily give you the right answer. It gives you probably the most fulfilling answer to a non-technical average human being.
H21KF2ZZ with a comment.
Yes, Brian?
Hi, Ray. I'm sorry. Hi, Ray. How are you doing today? No, there is no such thing as artificial intelligence. It is an acronym, okay, for an aggregation of web search data that makes it look like it's almost spoken by a human. If you ever use any of these AI, you know, like, for example, Copilot or ChatGPT, it always shows you their resources. So it's like, it's an aggregator, nothing more at this stage.
Well, I don't think I agree 100%. The pure robot-like aggregator was Google in the good old days. It just aggregated links and made them available to people using keywords. This is generative, artificial, limited intelligence. It's not conscious. It doesn't have any thought process. It is simply combining words based on probabilistic settings due to being fed millions and millions of words, and so it has a kind of a suborder to kind of not get into an argument with the person asking the question. So it can be relatively lied to, and it will accept it. So generative intelligence, as we know it now, is not real intelligence, but it is something a little bit above and beyond the old robots that used to scour the websites for Google and the other companies. So it's another type of parlor trick. But, you know, it's sophisticated enough, and it's kind of perpetuated in a way that makes people feel good about it, that people kind of go away a lot of times believing it, which is a problem.
When I was younger, I remember running on a 8-bit TRS-80 microcomputer, a program called Psychologist. And what you would do is you would ask it questions, and it would come back with some semblance that, hey, you know, it knows what I'm talking about. AI is a few steps up from that. It not only aggregates the information, but it puts it in a format that is easy to understand and conversational. But in my opinion, you know, by no means is it intelligent. It's just an intelligent aggregator. Okay, so AI backwards.
Okay, I mean, you're basically talking about Aliza, the one of the first famous attempts to solve the Turing dilemma of, you know, creating something that you can't tell the difference between a psychotic or a real human being. Again, that's kind of a primitive version. This is a heck of a lot more sophisticated. They crunched millions and millions of pages of text. They're using massive silicon. They're using a lot of electricity to run these things. So this is about the 3 or 4 dozen orders of magnitude more sophisticated than Aliza or any of her children. Again, it's a great parlor trick at this point. Whether it ever goes beyond the parlor trick, I don't know. I play with it every so often. I'll have conversations with it every so often. And I find it intriguing, but I don't depend on anything it says.
KG2R1.
Yes, David? First David, then Wesley.
Well, Roy, you know, I thought about Rich. I thought about AI. I thought about the Internet. There's got to be tons and tons of resources where, you know, he can find instruction on how to make an antenna. You know, different kinds of antennas. There must be tens of thousands of them out there. You know, how many times to turn the coil? How wide does the coil have to be? How long are the wires supposed to be? You know, all of that, for at least the most part, it can be determined maybe like that.
Okay, what can I tell you? I mean, it's just what we're stuck with at this time. A lot of people being suckered in, trillions of dollars being invested. Some of those guys will make a lot of money. A lot of those guys will lose a lot of money. It's kind of a mess. But you sort of have to understand what's going on under the hood. And even the specialists don't really get what's going on under the hood. You will kind of see two groups of people on places like YouTube and the other social places. One group who are just ready to bow down before their Silicon Master, and the other guy saying this is all a scam. Which one is right? Probably the guy in the middle who doesn't have a vested interest in either end of the spectrum. But, it's something that will be persisting. I mean, like I mentioned before, I usually start these technical nets by the latest, greatest nonsense going on with artificial intelligence. They've already kind of moved on from any day now there will be true artificial intelligence to the idea of super intelligence. That's where you get to bow down before your Silicon Masters. So, humanity is doing what it always does, running around like chickens with their heads cut off.
Brian?
Yes, Brian?
Well, it makes you really consider the wonders of the human brain. What's sitting between your ears, okay, has infinitely more power than what they have at this stage. I'm sure that in time, and with the proper algorithms that are self-learning, that there'll be some surprises.
Well, you never know, and as time moves on, eventually we may discover or we may not discover. At one point, it was mentioned, I think it was David, that you can go to the internet and find all your answers. You don't have to talk to Gemini. But the problem with the internet is no one checks the information. So there's very useful information on the internet, and there's complete nonsense on the internet. And there's no authoritative force to kind of say, this is true, this is false. I've gone to YouTube, and for some odd reason, when you go to amateur radio-related YouTubes, there's a significant uptick in nonsense being promoted, where people make stuff up and say the wrong things and don't know what they're talking about. You get that in general because no one's infallible, and again, there's no one keeping order. So the internet is full of wisdom and absurdities. And the problem is you have to kind of build your own BS meter and have it well calibrated for any kind of deep dive on the internet.
82201.
Yeah, Wesley first, then David.
I think we beat up the bushes on the subject. My office psychologist, she says that a crowd needs progress. And repeating kicking the ball from all of the sides doesn't make the ball more round or more flat. And thank you.
Okay, I mean, often I say that we're kicking a dead horse, but if there's one horse that we should keep on kicking, it's really artificial intelligence. It's going to be a massive part of our lives for the rest of our lives, no matter what it does or doesn't do. To give it the benefit of the doubt, to kick it one more time, I think that's reasonable. So let's see. I think David is next.
Yes, Roy. I want to say that there are certain sources that are reliable. One is ARRL. How many QST magazines have come out over the last maybe 60 or 70 years, with diagrams and instructions on how to build antennas, correct?
Yeah, but they also used to have the April edition where they told you how to build an antenna that doesn't physically work. And also, you know, unfortunately, you can't depend 100% on anything or anyone, unfortunately. The ARRL has this new Bylaw 18, which is reminiscent of a bylaw they tried to pass a few years ago, which basically kind of ended transparency and kind of made a lot of what goes on at the top of the organization very opaque. So there are better sources that are more dependable, but almost no one ultimately gets it right 100%. I mentioned before, and no doubt I'll mention again, Linus Pauling was a brilliant chemist. I met him once. He had two Nobel Prizes. A brilliant man. But he screwed the pooch with vitamin C. He was completely wrong about everything he ever said about vitamin C. So, you know, I mean, who knows?